and Lena Hosking. And actually, Michelle is sort of joining us, although she is actually traveling on a bus now and will be maybe checking in a little bit later. So anyway, she's listening and knows what we're about. I just want to welcome you to Module 5. I cannot believe that we're already there and that this is the final radio show of the term. As I said in both the description of the radio show and in the this week's description, we don't have a guest speaker purposefully for the last session so that we can answer questions, help, you know, we can further discuss or clarify or even share your experience with some of the concepts in the course. And then we also, if there's time, I know some people were interested in some of the projects I'm working on, which I'm happy to share. And I know Lena actually started to share her story at our last radio show about how she dealt with her data. And I meant to tell you, Lena, that I thought if you were willing, maybe walk us through, first of all, what you did your project on. And we know you recorded voices, which probably you shouldn't have done, but that's all right. We'll let it go by this time. But why don't you talk to us a little bit about how you made sense of the data that you gathered, but start by giving people a little sense of what you did so that they understand the nature of your project. Lena? Well, let me... Lena doesn't seem to...
Uh-oh. Am
Hi,
I there?
Lena. Yeah, you're crackling a little bit.
Oh, okay. Hopefully this will be a little bit better.
This sounds
sorry,
very
I think
well.
my mute button was being misbehaving, so...
Okay. No worries.
So what I did my project on was parent and child interactions in a construction-themed museum activities. So I chose... to observe on two different weekends at a museum. And they had this construction, what they called the construction zone, and they had lots of kids' toys that had to deal with construction. So they had lots of Legos and Tinker Toys and Lincoln Logs and Kinex sets and then other just kind of free building stuff that was made out of cardboard and things like that. And so they had these little tables around and benches and stuff like that. And so... I wanted to see what kind of interactions happened in that area. And then I also wanted to see something that was a little bit more facilitated, sort of, in a way. So they offer, on Saturdays, they offer an activity, a building activity that you... child can do with their parents. And I thought, oh, you know, this will be perfect because then I can compare my two different types of construction exhibits, one with toys and then one where we're actually using real tools.
Mm-hmm.
So we're building a little birdhouse is what the kids came in to do. And then I thought,
cool.
Oh, great. This is both the same idea of construction and building something, but in a slightly different way. And so, you know, one would be considered, well, I don't know, both of them are play, I guess.
Yep.
But one's, you know, obviously it's a different kind of experience and a different kind prior knowledge for parents.
Yeah, plus I was talking, a couple of students have been interested in this idea of facilitated versus unfacilitated, and we've talked about the other really pretty important part of this is the goal of the activity potentially is different, you know, where you want to have a birdhouse at the end, right? Versus
mm-hmm.
just maybe, you know, and this is where your notion, maybe it's free play versus sort of purposeful play. Who knows? But anyway, finish your story.
Right, right. Well, and that's what I was also curious about too then was, you know, well, you know, how are each one of these approached with the parents and their children? And so when I was in the construction zone area observing the kids, I had a large notepad with me. I wasn't the one who was doing the video recordings. I just wrote down things.
Oh, cool. Wonderful. I feel so much better. I've had guilt all these years.
Oh, yeah.
I'm joking.
That was mine. So what I did is I wanted to write down, you know, what kind of visitor it was. And so I kind of had, I had to develop some kind of, you know, coding system. Was it an adult female? I would write down AF. Was it an adult male? I would write down AM. If it was a preschooler, you know, then I was like a preschool male, you know, PM. Or, you know, was it an older male? Or, you know, and things like that. Elementary, that's what I put. I put EM for elementary male. And then I did the same thing for females and stuff like that. And then every once in a while I'd write down, you know, oh, this looks like it's a mom or a dad. But, you know, because sometimes that changes the way, you know, grandparents a little bit different. You know, if I could estimate their year, you know, how old they were, I might put that down. Because I thought, well, maybe it'd be interesting. I didn't know. Would there be differences by the way grandparents interacted than, you know, the parents? And, you know, I wasn't quite sure how large of the family size would they interact differently with their children versus, you know, we've got two parents with one child. Or, you know, two parents with two children or two parents with, you know, four children. You know, I was curious, like, well, there's a huge family dynamic there. So what happens?
Yep.
And so, you know, I'd kind of try to listen, you know, what the kids are doing and see, like, you know, how did they approach the toys? And was it the children that approached the toys or was it the parents, like, that were saying, oh, come on over here, let's play with this, you know, and how long did their interest last? And then, you know, if I could hear things. And I actually did hear lots of things, you know. I'd hear, you know, parents say, like, oh, you know, I remember playing with these kinds of toys and different things like that. And over the course of time of me, you know, I'm just like jotting down tons. So, I mean, I actually still have my old official notes of everything that I was jotting down. But I was trying to figure out, you know, well, which behaviors, you know, did I feel kind of were important? And in the end, I kind of felt like, you know, some of the behaviors that were important were, you know, who approached what, who interacted with what, you know, was the mom, you know, more interested in playing with the Legos or were the dads more interested? You know, moms definitely were not interested in playing with the Kinects pieces at all. But dads, you find them wandering over there all by themselves. They didn't care if there were any kids with them or not. You know, they were going to go play with the toys. You know, I kind of monitored. I wanted to know, like, family size, family gender, how they approached the exhibit, how long did they play with the certain kinds of toys, and then what kinds of things did they say. And then I would write down what I could hear, and then what kinds of things were parents, were they encouraging their kids to play longer? Were they actually helping their children? I know reading in some of the discussions, you know, people would say, well, you know, parents just kind of waltz in. Sometimes they just stand there and they just play on their cell phones. And I jotted that stuff down too. And did that matter? You know, parents who weren't actively engaged in trying to get their kids to play, how long did they last? Did the kids last very long in the construction zone? And I found out, yeah, it was interesting because it really ultimately did depend on the child's interest level. You could see some kids, they didn't care if their parents were helping them or not. They thought this was a cool toy. And then there were some parents that tried really, really hard. They're like, well, come look at the Lincoln Logs or come let's do this. And the kids are like, whatever, you know, I'm out of here. You know, I'm going to go play with the human body that's next door. And so interest, you know, I found out interest really played a lot with it. But yeah, I did find out that in both of the activities that, dads did really well with the birdhouse. They were the ones who took charge. You know, if it was a mom and a dad together, it was always the dad who was doing the building. But there were lots of moms who when they came in and they, it was just the mom and the child, well, then they learned how to build, but boy, they were a little bit more confused and frustrated, and they were looking at the instructions all the time. And I thought that was really interesting, where moms were more willing to help the kids go through the process, where dads are like, here, this is what you need to do. You do this, and then you do that, and you do you do this.
They took control. I was going to ask you, you said that the dads built the birdhouse, and it sounds like in some ways they did, right, rather than the child. So it's sort of an interesting, different notions of what facilitation is.
Yes, yes, it was very different. It was mom took on the encouragement role when it was the birdhouse building activity. Mom took on the encouraging role and was there to assist in any kind of way, or you know, sometimes to help with the painting and stuff like that. But you know, the dads were pretty much like, okay, and this is what you need to do, and then you do this. And some dads were really good about letting the kids do stuff, and then some dads weren't. But they really took over the role of teaching, where with the toys, it was kind of interesting. More moms were involved in teaching their kids with the toys, because I think it was just more open-ended, and it's a toy. And but it really depended on the kind of toy. So not all the toys.
So, Lena, I'm really interested, because you talked about watching and taking these notes. And now you've been telling us about sort of what you were able to say about what you saw. So there must have been some steps, or a big step, in between your observations and then what you were able to say about dads and moms. How did you get from the raw data, you know, these notes you said you were taking, and being able to talk about, you know, at least what you saw among these families?
Okay. So at first you just start, well, at first you're very overwhelmed. And then, okay, I knew I was going to be overwhelmed. I looked at, like, you know, my 10 pages of notes, and I was kind of like, how am I supposed to make sense of any of this? I saw so many amazing things, but how do I even combine this?
I still do that. And that, you know, I mean, that's what data collection is about, you know, particularly when you do this more qualitative stuff. So that's wonderful. Go on.
So first I want to say, well, okay, what kind of interactions? Because after you start watching for a while, you're like, ooh, now this is interesting. I have seen this behavior before. And then the third time you see it, you're like, ooh, you know, so then you start, your note-taking is a little bit more specific about what you're looking at. So then I started, you know, I noticed that my notes had changed, and I started writing down, well, it looks like the parents are teaching, or it looks like the parents are just facilitating, meaning they're doing the same thing with the child. They're assisting them, you know, verbally, versus teaching. Teaching was like, well, here, if you want to make a strong wall, you know, you need this many Legos kind of thing. And so I knew I was interested in the behaviors, and so I tried to look at some things that I saw. So I made myself a chart. So I went through all of my notes, and I went, okay, I'm going to give each one of these behaviors like a code, and then I have to go, well, what exactly does that mean? What kind of learning behavior goes with my code? So, for example, you know, was the child sharing? Were they excited about, you know, what they were doing? That was the behavior that I saw. And then in my notes, I went through all of the times where I wrote down something like, oh, you know, they were happy and they showed mom, you know, and then I wrote down share. And so I had all of these different families blocked off on my sheet. And so then I would write down how many different kinds of behavior codes that I saw. And then I wrote down things like, well, were they using cultural tools? Like, meaning, like, you know, the parents would tell the children, you need to pick up. You know, we can't leave a mess here with all the Legos, you know, because that's like a cultural thing. Like, well, we can't leave our space
like
a big mess.
Yeah, social norm that you don't leave a mess, right? Yeah.
Right, right. Yep. Exactly. You know, were they enjoying? Were they interacting with peers? Were they sharing? Were they pointing out things? Were they, you know, were parents being encouraging? Were they praising the child for their accomplishment? Were they teaching, facilitating? Were parents modeling, helping, or were they just observing? Were they just standing mm-hmm. there and going, "All right, I brought him. You know, I brought him to the museum. You know,
that's
all I need to do." That kind of thing. And then what I wanted to do is I wanted to compare the difference between the under construction and the kids' workshop.
I see.
And so I broke it up into two chunks. And so I created this chart that ended up having four blocks in it. And so I was looking for teaching interactions that happened in the under construction exhibit or the teaching interactions that happened in the kids' workshop, where they were building the birdhouses. And then what kind of, you know, social interactions were happening in the under construction, and what kinds of social cultural interactions were happening in the kids' workshop. And then I would actually, you know, go back over my notes and put like little lines, you know, next to it. Like, this is how many times I saw sharing. This is how many times I saw observing. This is how many times I saw helping in each one, so that way I could actually quantify it. I don't know if that makes sense, but
because
I was curious to see, well, how many times does this happen? And so once I had my block, my four squares, I guess, then I could actually count how many times this happened. And then who did it happen with? Was it happening with the males? Was it happening with the females? You know, that kind of thing. And so, yeah, I was totally surprised, because I had read stuff about, you know, gender and them and how parents kind of interact a little bit differently with their girls and boys. And I was like, well, I don't know if that's really going to happen. And it did. I was sort of blown away. I think the biggest part that blew me away is that there were tons of girls that came into the exhibit with no parent at all. Just, you know, like, obviously they were like, woo, and parents weren't following them. So, you know, it could have been, you know, and I wrote it in my study, could have been that the parents were dealing with a younger child and had to be somewhere else in the museum, and they felt really comfortable that their daughter could just go run off and play.
Mm-hmm.
But then I felt like, but the parents are missing out, because then sometimes the girls, they would try to do something. Like, I had quite a few girls in my notes that said, oh, this is really hard. I can't get it. I mean, I remember one little girl just looking at me going, oh, can you help me? And I was kind of like, oh, I'd love to help you, sweetie.
But I'm doing research, and I can't.
I can't help you, honey. But it was really cute what they would sometimes say. And I was like, you can't help it. You have to be like, you know, at first I'm like, oh, where are these parents? They're missing this awesome opportunity to take science to the next level with their daughters and encourage building and engineering minds, and they're not here. And then I had to think, whoa, you know, now I'm imparting my own views on my research.
Exactly. I was just going to jump in there, my dear.
Yeah.
You jumped in yourself.
Yeah, and so I had to go, well, there could be some other reasons why this is happening. And so I did mention that in my report, that, hey, you know, maybe there were parents, you know, maybe these girls, I mean, it's true, most of the girls that came into the exhibit were a little bit older, so, you know, maybe the parents were dealing with a younger child somewhere else. You know, maybe the girls were just, I don't know, maybe they were just real curious, adventurous girls, and they ran away from their parents, and took their parents a while. You know, maybe they were in a big group.
And actually, I think another possibility, although it's hard for those of us who think in the facilitation role, is maybe an unanswered question or a roadblock, if it's not totally discouraging, is a good thing. My mother-in-law tells a story about how she grew up in the South, and her family would make lemonade, and they would come out on the porch, and they would bring lemonade in this pitcher to the porch, and she was fascinated that there was, you know, these water drops, and she figured, she thought it was lemonade. And so she had a, I think he was an uncle who, you know, said, well, why don't you taste it? And she would taste it, and it was just water. And she tried to figure out all these things about what is happening with this pitcher. And then it took a little bit of time, and then later she learned about condensation, and she realized that, you know, it was cold lemonade going out on a hot porch in the South. And but she, you know, she hadn't been so discouraged, and I think that's the sort of tricky bit about this. She hadn't been so discouraged. She was still trying to think about why is that. Now she knew it was pretty pure water on the outside of the lemonade pitcher. So I think, you know, sometimes if you can over facilitate, you can over teach, particularly if we're thinking about free choice learning. So I think it's trying to find that that balance. So anyway, I just want to remind people, we still have, according to my clock, about 38 minutes. You can call in with questions you might have about your final report. The number is 347-202-0449. Or we also said if you have any questions about concepts in the course that you'd like to, you know, clarify or talk about, you can do that. And actually, I just wanted to offer another opportunity. And Michelle was talking about this when we were talking before the radio show started. Both of us, and I'm sure Lena as well, are really impressed by the types of projects that you have chosen to do. If people just want to call in and share the project that they're doing and just, you know, give us a sense of that, we would be thrilled to hear from people. Oh, we have a call. This is great. Okay. So I'm going to allow this person to talk because I have the power, but I want them to, please introduce yourself and tell us if you're a certificate or a master's student, and we'd love to hear what you have to say.
Oh, wonderful. Well, this is Cassandra Davis, and I am a master's student, and I wanted to touch on something that you had mentioned a little bit earlier, which was the conflict of, you know, biting your tongue when you're doing research like this. And, you know, making sure you don't interfere, especially for those of us who are doing research at institutions where we are working. You know, do you feel that it's easier if you're maybe not in uniform, or if you're, I don't know, what techniques can help you not jump in there? And
well, first of all, I think all of us have had that experience. Actually, one of my favorite stories, and it's sad in some ways, is I was working on a project in, at the Air and Space Museum, and it was both collecting data, but also building capacity within the staff. And there was this very well-meaning space scientist who said he wanted to learn about how to collect data. And I said, fine. And I gave him, you know, the questions we were asking. And he asked the first question and sort of jumped on the person and said, that's not right. Which I would never assume, Cassandra, you would do that. And I sort of stepped back and I thought, maybe we shouldn't have, you know, all of, you know, we have to maybe think about which scientists we're engaging in. And, you know, he went through this very complex explanation explanation. I saw the people he was talking to just glaze over. But you know what? I talked to him after, and he said, yes, that's right. I have to have a different role here. So a couple of things. First of all, yes, I have a very scarred tongue from biting it many times. Actually, it does help if your institution is comfortable with this to dress more like your visitors than wearing your uniform. Now, there are some institutions, and this is totally appropriate, that you know want you to show that you are a part of the institution. So, and that's fine too. And you know, there are ways to sort of come up and say, hi, you know, my name's Cassandra. I work at this institution and I was noticing, and maybe you can say that you had a question and then sort of talk about how they proceeded with it. But I'll say another thing that frankly some of my colleagues think is heretical, which is, you know, there's been all this conversation in the field about like misinformation and people not understanding. And honestly, when I guess, you know, I tend to think about there's this whole world out there, and people misunderstand things all the time. And, you know, what we hope is that after having a number of experiences, they'll sort of figure it out. And because we deal with, many of us, particularly in places like museums and science centers, deal with people for such small amounts of time, that it's probably better to try to encourage them than sort of say, hey, you've got it all wrong here. So I don't know if that helps. Lena, I don't know if you have thoughts about Cassandra's question. It's a really, really good one, Cassandra.
Yeah. Well, so you mean just basically how do you be a bystander without getting involved and also, you know, putting your own views into
yeah, when
it.
You, when you work, yeah, when you work at the place.
Yeah, I think that would be very challenging. I agree with Lynn, you know what I mean? If you don't dress in your regular uniform at all or anything like that. I did have up a sign so that way people wouldn't be super concerned that I was taking notes and just staring at their children.
Lena, mm-hmm. That's actually a customary protocol if you have institutional review board, what's called the IRB. So that was a great thing to do. And you just tell people that you're going to be watching and maybe taking notes, and then they have a choice whether to walk into that area or not.
Exactly. Yeah.
Great.
To look at it, I guess, are you also asking how to look at it just from a real critical eye? Because, you know, I guess in that way what would be more helpful if you were actually observing an exhibit that you weren't very familiar with. You know, like in my circumstance, I'm not a children's museum employee, so I was not very familiar with the space in itself. So I thought that was actually very helpful because I could look at it probably completely different than somebody who would put their heart and soul into designing this exhibit and knew all the ins and outs and the way it could be facilitated. I had no idea how it could be facilitated.
Yeah.
And so I was able to look at it that way.
Yeah. What's interesting, Lena, is sometimes it helps to know more. And but you have to sort of know where the line is. And then actually, it can really be beneficial to look at it with new eyes. And there are some efforts now to have two people looking one who is like you wasn't involved and someone who was, so that they can sort of share what they're seeing and tease out maybe what's, you know, maybe the middle part is really important. Because sometimes there have been decisions by the team that are really critical to understanding what's going on in the interaction. So, well, we have another question. And by the way, Cassandra, you are welcome to stay online, but we have another, maybe not a question, maybe someone wanting to share something. I'm going to pull them in, but I'm going to keep you on the line, Cassandra, if you want to talk about something else. It's great to have all these calls. Hi there.
Hello.
Who do we have
here? This is
Jenny
East. This is Jenny East calling.
Oh, great. You told me you would call, Jenny.
Jenny, I was just about to quote your posting on Blackboard about seeking out docents and not caring about the right answer in response to what Lynn was saying earlier.
Oh, funny. That is
Cassandra,
funny.
Cassandra,
well,
meet Jenny in voice, and Jenny, meet Cassandra in voice.
I know, it's so great to have this opportunity, even though, you know, we talk through cyberspace and then to actually talk on the phone, so it makes it even more fun.
Yeah.
So I wanted to ask a question, Lynn, just kind of going off of our conversation yesterday of talking about how to create good, relevant, and testable research questions and giving your perspective on that process and sharing that experience with the broader class, just from our discussion yesterday.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you for asking probably one of the more difficult research questions, so which is what I told Jenny. No, I'm teasing you. But, yeah, I think even now, after I've been in the field all these years, trying to figure out, you know, what is the question that I want to ask, and one of the things I've learned that is really important is to think about layers of questions, because ultimately what is most important to a research study is that you can observe or study something and that you can actually make claims. If you think about the wonderful examples Lena was sharing about, you know, she had these interests about, you know, what's the influence of gender going to be? You know, whatever you are trying to understand, if you want to make claims, you have to make sure that your question is specific enough. And I've mentioned this to several people in terms of giving them feedback on their final projects. Can you actually observe this in a way that you can make a claim that you can justify? And I'm thinking actually about our conversation, Jenny. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your project and how, and then we can talk sort of through how we arrived at what would be a good research question.
Sure. So I am studying family interactions at the Hatfield Marine Science Center in Newport, Oregon. And we have an exhibit that's a touch table. So how I describe it to people is it looks like a giant iPad that's the size of a kitchen table. 4 to 6 people can stand around it pretty comfortably, and they can all use it at the same time. So it's not like a desktop computer where only one person can kind of use the mouse or direct it, but there's multiple points on the table that you can tap on. And right now we have content on there that's related to the electromagnetic spectrum. So there's all these different images, and if you drag them across the screen, you can see how it can change from infrared light to visible to ultraviolet to X-ray. So, for example, if there's a picture of a boot, you can see the boot change under all those different wavelengths of light. So my main master's project is looking at the adult and child interactions, and I filmed 25 families using the touch table exhibit, and I've used a rubric to kind of score different dimensions such as directive engagement, so how frequently or how obvious the adult is in guiding the child in how to use the exhibit or to accomplish like a particular task, learning strategies, so whether or not they're asking questions or talking about the content on the table, or are they only talking about the table itself as an exhibit, as something unique and novel. And then responsive engagement, so whether or not the adult and child stay within close proximity to the exhibit. Are they acknowledging when a child says something like, oh, mom, look at this? Is the mom even paying attention to the child, or are they just so engrossed in their own use of the exhibit that they're not really paying attention to that opportunity with their child? So in watching all the videos, I've noticed that there's some occasions where the child takes more control of driving the experience or showing the adult how to use the exhibit or to accomplish different tasks like sizing the images or recognizing that the images change as they move across the screen. And I'm curious if the strategies that the kids use to show their parents what they say and how like their physical behaviors and showing them are different from how an adult approaches that situation or shows the child how to use it. So I found yesterday, I was pulling out videos, a subset of my 25, and I found 5 of each that are more or less from how I coded, kind of give really obvious of that directive engagement from either the child perspective or the adult. And so that's, I'm really curious just to see the strategies that each of those different age groups use to kind of use that exhibit.
Yeah, and I think that my sense is when you started and first sent me a research question, it was a big, big, broad question. And yeah. As we talked, and even as you know, it was great. You actually, what you were processing this even before we met, you had very, very specific questions, which you just articulated very well. So, I mean, it is, I think Lena said this well, that you actually, the great thing about qualitative research, now, this isn't always the case with quantitative research, but sometimes, you know, you can have a research question, but as you look and as you see what emerges, you can actually modify your question. And so, which I think is something that draws me to this kind of research, because it is a little more forgiving, and it actually, it's not even forgiving, but it actually, you learn as you watch interactions and allows you to build that learning into your questions. I don't know if that is helpful, Jenny.
No, I think it was a great opportunity to at least, you know, put that broad question out and then have continue like seeking other experts like yourself or just talking about it with others to kind of like find out what, from an outsider's perspective, what parts of the question were confusing or where mm-hmm. I needed to elaborate or define more, so I can see the value in talking with other people when you're creating your research projects or questions, just to kind of make sure, is it clear to someone else who's also interested in the research as well?
Yeah, and once
yeah,
again,
Jenny,
I
could you...
Oh,
I was wondering if Jenny could share, I don't know if you have it in front of you, but if you could tell the class, what was your broad question, and then what is the refined question? Because
okay.
Maybe it would be helpful for people
to
hear the difference.
That.
Do you? Okay. Because I think it would be helpful for, you know, the class maybe to hear the difference between what you started out with and then what is your more refined.
Now,
can you read the broad one while I get my notes out, and then I think that'll help.
Yeah, and I'm looking for your, I have the broad one too. I mean, I have the specific mm-hmm. one. Do you have the broad one?
I think so. I said more or less, like, how do adults and children demonstrate methods of facilitation or direction when using a multi-touch table exhibit together?
Yeah, I think, yeah, but how do they demonstrate, it was what? Facilitation and direction.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I can even fill in here. I sent Jenny a note and I said, you know, I'm intrigued by your research question, but I'm not sure that I understand what you mean by demonstrate facilitation or direction. So that was my feedback.
Right.
Yeah. And then I
and
said,
so then,
yes.
Right.
Yeah.
And then it evolved and I said, okay, so how do they perform particular tasks like moving images, sizing images? But when the adult or child take on that leadership role to direct the experience, what physical behaviors and conversations or like what terms are they using to convey that? Is there an indication that there's different strategies that support the meaning making? So based on how the child shows the adult how to use the touch table, do you get a sense from observing the video and hearing what they say in response or the behaviors that they express shortly after, like does use of that touch table make more sense to them? Does the content make more sense to them? And just kind of comparing those two situations, like how does I like to say, how does a child become, like, put the teacher hat on versus how does an adult take the put the teacher hat on? And how does that look?
Mm-hmm.
So, and again, it's like, this is my shameless plug for reading my final paper and how it looks even more eloquent from beyond what I've said just now, so.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think both you and Cassandra, and by the way, Cassandra, I'm so thrilled you're in the program. Cassandra actually volunteers, I believe this is still the case, at the Aquarium of the Pacific, and she's worked there previously. And, you know, you're raising two issues. How, as a thoughtful practitioner, can I engage in this research piece without, like, jumping in and grabbing people around their throats when they don't do what they're supposed to do. I'm joking. And then this whole issue of what's a good research question to ask. And I think these are both huge challenges. And as I said, I think in both cases, as a researcher, there's still is something that I have to think about when I'm doing my work as well. So we're down to about 17 minutes, so I just want to invite other people to call in. We have a great conversation going. You can change the what we're talking about, but by all means, feel comfortable calling in. The number is 347-202-0449. I don't know if you have other things to say, Cassandra or Jenny?
I'm good. I just wanted to ask that main question, but it'd be great to hear from other folks. So I'm going to step off and listen online now.
Okay, cool.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, Lynn.
Yeah?
This is Michelle. I made it off
wonderful.
The bus, so I've just been listening, waiting for
Hi,
a time
Michelle.
To chime in.
Please chime in.
Interesting conversation, and I think it comes down to two main factors, one of which has been coming up a lot in the certificate course as well. So first, I think Jenny said this, and I just want to make sure everybody heard it. It's really unique to be in classes and to do degrees, a master's or a PhD, and kind of be in this own world of your research. And I actually just had this experience today, and that it's very unlikely that, again, in the future, you'll be doing this by yourself, that you always work with a team and that you always have input from other people that help shape those research questions and help shape how you analyze your data. And so, you know, it's a unique position for now, but I think the interesting thing about this field is that we are all great communicators and trying to grow the field and therefore rely on each other to bounce these ideas off of. And with that being said, in relation to her Jenny's example of her research question kind of being narrowed down, something I've had to give a lot of feedback to is this idea of operationalizing terms. What exactly do you mean by when they look happy, for instance? You know, how are you actually observing that they are happy? Is it a smile? Is it laughter? All of those little things that I think are really important to consider when we're talking about observation. So I just kind of wanted to chime in on that, operationalize and understand what terms mean as everybody kind of progresses and writes their papers.
Yeah,
that's true because... Well, I wanted to say in my paper, I had to put a chart because it's true because I was curious about that too. I thought, wow, you know, my definition of encouragement might be different than someone else's definition of encouragement. So I better tell everyone what encouragement means to me and what I consider it. And so, yeah, I had to have a chart. Exactly.
Yep, yep. We have another caller, so I'm going to call on them, and we'll see what... Please let us know who you are and what you want to know.
Oh, hi, this is Amber calling from Hawaii.
Woo!
Nice to meet you, Amber.
Yeah.
Nice to meet you guys. And yes, I don't sound Hawaiian. I'm from Australia, so don't be put off by that, please. I do have a question. I think you kind of addressed it a little bit with regard to, you know, how to approach research questions and especially Lynn, you mentioned as well, like in this field, being able to actually modify your question as you go and observe an interaction. One of the greatest challenges that I've found in you know, just coming up with my question and what to observe is the very nature of free choice learning, that people are coming in with the choice. And so you come up with a question, but you can plan all you want that you're going to observe it, but it doesn't always happen. Case in point, I'm supposed to observe for my project a group of low-income preschool children coming to the Bishop Museum and watching the interaction in the family groups that come with them. But as with anything, they just cancelled. I know, right? And ironically, why? Because of non-payment.
Amber and
why?
I talked about yesterday, so that's why I'm responding in that very emotional way. Yes, we live in the real world, don't we?
Yeah, so how is it that you can... My question is that, you know, I know this isn't a one-off case, and these are cases that are kind of important to research. So how do you get around that? How do you, you know, how can you plan for that? I mean, you can't plan for cancellations and that, but how can you adjust your research questions kind of when you have timelines and... You know, these are needs groups where you want to find these answers. So I'm just kind of putting that out there as a practical challenge that seems to come with the field.
This is a little bit different from your situation, but, you know, we were this project that I've been working on with John Falk and others in Portland, we knew that we wanted to track youth for 4 to 5 years, a case study set of youth, and we were going to interview them every like 4 to 6 weeks, and we knew that this was going to be really onerous and people were going to move or have other things happen in their lives. We did something called, you know, oversampling. So we wanted to have at least 15 families. And so we started out with a sample of like 25. And lo and behold, we're now entering our 5th year and we have 15 families that we feel pretty good about staying in the study. So, you know, one thing that you do is you oversample. And so, for example, Amber, you were depending upon this group, and we can talk about what you do on the side, but if you were doing this, for example, as a, you know, a dissertation study, for example, you would have a number of these groups that were planning to come. And so if one canceled, it wasn't what you'd hoped, but it was still manageable within the design of your study. But, you know, it's funny. I think this is another difference between the kind of work that, and it's not always the case, but, you know, doing work in schools is a whole lot easier sometimes because groups are there. And, you know, even if someone is absent on the day that you're collecting data, the class is still there. What is challenging, as you pointed out at the beginning, is that these are entirely free choice. And so, you know, situations can come up. Do you know why they canceled?
Well, this is the irony of it, is canceled. They got canceled because of non-payment, and I know exactly why non-payment, because they're a low-income area, and they wouldn't have been able to collect the money in time. And so it's one of those classic cases where you're damned if you do, and you're damned if you don't. You know?
Yeah. So actually, they didn't cancel as much as you canceled them, right? But within
I wouldn't have wanted to, but yeah, it's
Yep.
Policy.
And
this speaks
so much to some of the things we've talked about in this class, that maybe there's a little bit longer timeline for groups like this, that you know, I know how excited you were. You said they don't come very often, for example, that actually, you know, in some ways it's a really positive thing that they had chosen to come to the museum. So trying to figure out how to, you know, see, can they be given maybe a little more leniency, although I also know that different institutions are dealing with, you know, some of them depend on this revenue to keep their doors open, too. So
I think what you bring up, Amber, is an absolutely excellent point. That is what I've had to, what I have been dealing with my capstone project myself. I had lots of different ideas of things that I wanted to do, and then I thought I had this wonderful plan, and I was going to train these museum volunteers on how to bring, you know, STEM concepts forward in a history museum, something that they've never really done before, and I was really excited about it. And then finally, when I really got hold of the museum educator and we actually really had a heart-to-heart talk, at the very end of the conversation, she was like, well, I really only have one volunteer that helps with school groups. Mm-hmm. And you were like, oh, I did
three weeks
worth of research and literature, and now you're telling me I don't have volunteers that I can teach? And you're like, you're crushed. You're just crushed. And then you're like, okay, don't give up. Don't give up. Let me see if I can come up with another kind of question that I can still use in this environment that still kind of gets at what I'm trying to talk about, and so that's where the brainstorming, that's where your scientific skills come in, and you're like, okay, well, how about this, and how about that, and, well, I read this here, you know, and this is kind of interesting, and then you kind of go down another path because you've read a little bit more literature, I guess, and that kind of helped me.
Yeah.
But, you're right, it's tough, but you just try to pick yourself up again, read some more, and then see if you can salvage your project.
Something. and if I, because I know there's not much time left, I guess a leverage that I'm trying to take as an alternative is I get free tickets, and I know some families in that community. So I've made some phone calls and said, hey, do you want to come to the museum for the day? And I'm just going to do an observation. Is that okay?
Cool. That's great. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. You're making lemonade out of lemons, right?
I hope so.
Yeah. So
no,
we have
you,
about 5 minutes left. We would have time still for a short question. The call-in number is 347-202-0449. But I think we've had a really interesting conversation, frankly, about the challenges of doing research, and particularly, I think, in the settings in which we work, where we can't, sadly, sometimes people call children in school and classrooms captive audiences because they're right there, and as long as you can get permission from the school, you can actually have, you know, access to children to do studies. It's very, very different in the settings in which we work. That actually, interestingly, I learned from the Institutional Review Board, are considered public spaces in a way that schools are not. So, you know, I find that really fascinating, that we sort of have to worry not only about who we might want to involve in a study, but all the other people that might be there. You know, if you have permission to study a classroom, you know, maybe some kids leave, but you have the permission to look at the whole class. So it's very, very interesting. So any other thoughts or comments? Any last things? Cassandra's still here. Amber's still here, and Lena's still here. So we have a couple of minutes if you want to make a final comment or ask a really quick question.
If I can say something, I would like to say thank you to everyone on the discussion boards, and even just folks who've taken the time, like Lynn and Lena, to one-on-one discuss things, because just the process in itself is extremely valuable. I've never been in a program where, for school, like graduate school or university, where it's been this kind of back and forth facilitation, but that has been extremely helpful for me. So I just wanted to put that out there and say thank you for the process.
That's lovely. And actually, I'd just like to jump on that and say that's what sociocultural dimensions of learning are, right? We're all teachers, we're all learners. And I'd like to add that I want to thank everyone in the class, because I've learned so much from the work that you're interested in, the questions that you're asking, and anyway, it's been a real delight. I told Amber and I told Jenny, and I'll share this with everyone, honestly, and this is the best class I've ever had in sociocultural dimensions of learning. I've learned a lot in my previous experiences, but this class has been really, really special in ways I can't even describe. So thank you. Cassandra, do you want to say a final something? Or I don't want to put you on the spot.
No, just to echo the same sentiment. This has been really incredible to be able to speak with you, be able to jump on the blog talk sessions. I don't always get to call in, but to be able to listen to them and interact, all of the interactions have been amazing.
Oh, that's wonderful. I'm glad, you know, once again, to all of you, I'm so glad if it feels the same way. And the great thing about learning is we keep doing it. So even if at the moment this doesn't seem to feel the same way, hopefully in the long term it will. Lena, do you want to say any final stuff?
Well, I just want to say how impressed that I've been. I agree with Lynn, and I've really enjoyed. I know that I'm not like you know, responding to every single person in the discussion boards, but that's because I want you guys to sort of talk and get your own feel, and then I'll chime in a little bit just to bring up just something. But I just love how you're really taking that literature and going, hey, this is what's happening at my place. I've actually seen it. I like hearing that real tie, that application of what you see happening in the real world. So that's been wonderful.
Oh, thank you. Thanks, everyone, and thank you for calling in, and we'll keep talking via email.